You're listening to the Modern Producer Podcast, expert talk on livestock housing and animal husbandry. Get ready for today's episode.
Yeah, get ready indeed. That intro makes me laugh still. Okay, so if you're tuning into this one and you have not listened to the last one, I very strongly suggest you go back and do that first. But if you don't care to, what this episode is going to be is a continuation of one where Tim and I decided, because of all the circumstances in life and haven't been able to see each other in over half a year and whatnot, that we would get together virtually, which is what everybody's doing, and crack a beer and have a chat. So we're not exactly starting this one on the first beer, and therefore I make no apologies or excuses for what's about to come out. Yeah. Well, we were talking. Tim's here. I'm here. Have you got Ben to join us at this point?
Oh, I've been trying to drag Ben in. He's sort of been monitoring the door to make sure nobody comes in and starts yelling, "Where's Tim? Where's Tim?" or something like that. And we've got Jake sitting.
You don't
sitting.
Have a close sign?
Oh, I have a close sign, but we're still in business. I got to keep the door open.
I was going to say, you just gave away the fact that we didn't record this in the evening, that this was actually during business hours. I guess we hadn't mentioned that.
Crap. Was I not supposed to say that out loud?
Yeah, well.
No, we're professionals.
No apologies.
Yes.
We're professionals.
Yeah. I'm working.
That's my wife.
You told her to leave you alone. You're working this afternoon. Do not disturb.
Hey. The doors are locked in the shop. I'm sitting here by myself, and yes, I'm having a few beer and enjoying some conversation with my brother. So I don't suppose that's the worst thing in the world.
Well, I'm not going to frown down upon it. But then again, I'm your brother, and I'm having beers with you. So
exactly. Yeah, you got a vested interest.
Okay, we're really setting the tone for this one. What are we doing here? Actually, we're talking. We started the last one, actually, just to kind of, all jokes aside, we were having a lot of just good conversations with some catching up on what's been going on in the industry, some of the new stuff, the exciting stuff we've been seeing. There is stuff. There's actually a lot of excitement in terms of, I think, some technology is finally catching up with our industry, which is kind of fun to see, and guys that actually are engaging it in things differently and how they control it. So it is kind of fun. So again, all jokes aside, we aren't just goofing off.
Yeah, on that note, do you think part of it is because we're now starting to be the, not necessarily the oldest, but the older farts? I think a lot of what we're seeing, not only with what's available, but how it gets implemented, is kind of a generational shift. We're starting to get people in these facilities that have grown up with technology, so therefore they're better poised to actually utilize it for what it's capable of.
Well, I think
you've seen that.
I called that coming. That was coming about 4 years ago. I already said that there is. It's coming. It's not quite. It wasn't quite there yet. But I said we're about to see that. And I don't think it's not that they're. I think the terminology or the way you phrased it might not be perfectly accurate. It's not that they're poised. They're just not willing to accept anything but.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're poised to take advantage of it, but they're looking at it and saying, this isn't good enough. There's a lot of guys who are saying...
We've got it everywhere else in our life. We've got it in our trucks. We've got it in our houses. We talked about housing automation, as much as it's not that fancy, but they've got it in their pocket at all times. So why can't it be in my barn?
Exactly. And so I think we're starting to really see that where it's not acceptable to be less than. It's not mm-hmm. okay to just say, well, you got to integrate four or five different systems manually where you have to extract data from this and you have to extract data from that and you have to sort of make notes on your water meter so that you can put it all into a spreadsheet for your for your nutritionist or your vet or for anybody. It just doesn't make sense anymore. If it isn't automated, it's way behind at this point.
Right.
And I'm using some pretty crude and basic examples. Obviously, we've been doing water metering for quite a long time. But the ability to integrate mass data collection into one platform, we're not even truly absolutely there yet, but boy, are we moving rapidly in that direction.
Yeah, at the same time, you don't want to overwhelm them with too much, then it becomes unusable data, right? It still has to be functional.
Oh, of course. You have to make it so that the user can, like, an overload of information is pointless to everybody.
Yeah. Goes into shutdown mode. But anyway, spinning it back around, I guess we had talked about a whole bunch of other things in the previous episode, but one of the things we didn't touch too much on is where the industry's, well, not the industry, but where business right now is truly at. There are some new projects going on or completing. As you've just, if I'm not mistaken, you just completed one. Is that in Missouri, was it?
Well, completed might be an incorrect term at this point. They've been breeding gilts for about 4 weeks now, but the farrowing isn't done. The TikTok.
Very typical. Yeah. The barn's done, but now the stopwatch has been set. You better finish the next part because they're coming.
Yeah. So that's where we're at. It's getting closer, much closer, and it has no choice but to finish at this point. Barn. Yeah. And that's what actually, okay, so that's that been a one, fun because, project.
Again, I've never been down there. Not sure I would have been even in normal times regardless, but certainly with what's been going on in the world, I'm not traveling down there just to check it out. Give us a rundown. We talked about all the automation and the fun stuff that's in there. What did they all incorporate?
How modern
is this barn?
This one is actually, it's kind of fun for me because it's sort of, and I'm going to avoid trying to use that stupid phrase, but it sets a standard and even a new standard, if you will, on how things can be done. Yeah, well, sorry. I said I wasn't going to, and I did anyway. Well, I didn't know how else to say it, but here's where we're at. It's really kind of fun because we're taking every aspect that we can do with electronic feeding, with the electronic cell feeding and using the right way to do it with the larger groups with the NEDAP equipment, forward moving exit so that you don't have interaction between the girls who are still hungry and the girls who have been fed. We're doing electronic feeding, individual feeding in the breeding stalls so that if there's any girls that need special attention, you can handle that. We're doing farrowing feeding.
So you've actually incorporated electronic feeding on the breeding stalls then?
On every one but one stall, because there was a drive unit that had to be placed above the one stall. So we have one out of 398 stalls, if I'm not mistaken, that's there, but it doesn't have any kind of feeding, to be honest. It's not usable.
There's your call stall. Yeah. You only need one.
It's a hand feeding, though. Yeah. the space was a little bit tight just in that one corner. But, yeah, so we've done it over the feeding. We're doing it in the farrowing as well. But in the farrowing, we've added the wireless activators, which is a really cool technology on the NEDAP's part, coming over from the dairy side of things, where they're doing a lot of wireless antennas, it's wireless type of communication between devices. It's not just antennas, where they can now use some of the technology that's been developed for a number of years in the dairy to create these wireless activators, where the sows can now decide when she wants to eat and she can feed herself accordingly. It's quite cool to integrate all of that. And on top of that, we had talked about in the previous podcast about the fusion controls. They've also chosen at Honey Grove down there to use the fusion controls. And one of the key aspects of that was the ability to talk directly to the programmers, to talk directly to the owner and the owners, and look at the customer and say, you know, you've got some good ideas. Why don't we incorporate them so that it works well for you? And that's kind of a really unique ability, because we took that and I'm.
So what are you not controlling in that barn?
I don't.
You've got the fusion in there. I have to assume you're doing the feeding, watering, lighting, all that.
Well, I don't flush the toilets automatically. beyond that, I'm struggling. Here, I mean, we're taking it to the level.
Because even the Fusion, because we can access a browser with it, if you've got the NetApp feeding, technically they could be standing at or accessing one system and access everything, even though the NetApp is a totally separate system.
Yeah.
They can access, program, check on, do whatever right through one screen, one HMI, absolutely, the human interface.
Yeah. But we've taken it to this level where, of course, this is a sow barn. It has electric water jacketed heat mats in the farrow wing for the piglets' comfort. We might put, they're still debating, it's kind of late in the game, but they're still debating whether they put heat lamps or at least the infrastructure in for heat lamps, but they've got heat mats. And what we're doing there is that, of course, any kind of heating in the farrow wing when it comes to the heat mats or heat lamps or whatever is a huge electrical load.
Tremendous. That's a huge electric.
And it's very difficult to justify a generator, a backup generator that can handle maximum heat mat or heat lamp load in the middle of winter if you happen to lose electricity. It's just really difficult to justify that.
I don't know how you pay for that. They don't all need to be used at the same time either.
But what we've done now is that this was one of the ideas when we were sitting in the meeting where we were talking with the guys who are going to be running the barn. They said, well, what we'd like to do is have somebody just monitor our barn loading in our entire amp loading on the barn. And if it were running on a generator, let's monitor that and control our output load so that we don't overload the generator. So now what we're going to be doing is we're going to be actually writing a program so that when the gen set is actually running, should it ever need to run, we will actually automatically be able to control the outputs on all of the devices in the barn to make sure that we don't overload the genset. This allows the customer, therefore, to buy a genset that makes sense for the proper size and still be able to
keep the lights on and feeding and do whatever. But then say, hey, I got enough load for two rooms worth of heat mats, and let's run those, then cycle into those.
We might do is actually trim off a third or a half of the actual room lights to say, by trimming off the room lights allows us to run more heat mats. And sure, it gives us that ability to make that, it prioritizes what's important in terms of electrical loading. So we're not flushing the toilets, but we're doing pretty much everything else in the barn.
There's a cost savings again, same control, didn't add any cost, but there's a cost savings to go, I don't need a bigger generator. I don't need one that can handle it all because I don't have the ability to tell what's actually going to run. So I have to figure for worst case scenario.
Yeah. So
we're doing something similar in very basic, I guess, similar but basic. Another project in Ontario where his water supply isn't quite up to, obviously you want to make sure all the pigs have water first, but if it's hot out and got to start running soakers or drippers, his water supply is not going to quite keep up with all of them being on at once. So all it is basically looking at the entire barn and going, who's calling for it? And let's prioritize and run them on offset schedules. They don't run 24/7 anyway. They run on a cycle timer, and it'll basically be able to say, fine, parent room one was the first one to call, let us go. But two can't run until one's done, and then it can run, and three can run after that. And we still have enough time and day. We can run soakers as the animals need. We just have to delay the start and offset them, and his water supply can keep up. And I've never had the ability to even think of that before. He threw the idea at me, and went, again, answer's yes, we can do that. So
give me a day. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't say give me a day. I says, give me a day. I got to talk to Dwayne. I'll tell you how we do it.
Back to the guy we should learn how to clone. I've always said that, if you could, if you mentioned cloning to Dwayne, he probably knows how to do it anyway.
Yeah, well, for a guy who does his own teeth fillings, probably not far off.
No, there's, yeah, let's not even go down that path.
There's a whole other story.
Yeah, yeah. So no, actually back to just to bring it around or bring it full circle, all that stupid sayings that everybody shouldn't use at the end of the day and all that. It's actually a really fun barn. Just there's so much stuff going on, and yet it's so cleanly managed. I've never seen anything like it. It's kind of fun to work in, and so it's tying in a lot of the aspects of what we know and what we've developed over the years in terms of managing sows, and it's kind of funny because it ties into, we always hear this term social distancing now, again, a term we referenced in the last podcast. With sows, social behavior in general, whether it's social distancing or social interaction in general, has always been the most important part of their ability to live together, and yet one of the least understood things out there.
You know what just occurred to me?
Oh, great.
And yeah, last episode. Yeah, oh, great. Well, last episode we had mentioned about how this physical distancing, social distancing, whatever term you want to put on, is easy for me because I don't like a lot of people within my bubble. And that's my life. But if we think about sows, where we know they have a small group that they're perfectly happy with / desire to be close to, and then the rest of them can piss right off. That's, again, maybe why we understand how they operate more, because I have and always have only needed a small group of people that I'm close with, and the rest of the world can come and go. I will interact with them, but don't get too close.
Yeah.
I think that's probably why we understand how they want to function, because that's how we function, unfortunately.
I have no idea how to respond to the fact that you just compared us to pigs, but...
well... we like to keep ourselves clean, contrary to popular belief. All those things. Yeah, we can start breaking down myths if you want. But as you were saying that how they interact socially, and that's something you and I have always paid more attention to on how those animals want to be by their own nature, by their own.
It's a given traits. It's the way they're programmed. Yeah. You know,
when you can see that in their nature, and then enable it through design, it's rewarding. But it's also, it works. It's not that we're teaching the pigs how to do something they don't naturally want to do. We're giving them an environment wherein their nature is actually enabled or built up, not changing their nature.
Sure. So again, you're just digging that hole deeper, where we're basically down at the pig level.
Down at the pig level. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were talking about the social interaction in those groups, and that's what made my...
No, I get it. I mean, I really don't think most people give a lot of credence to the fact that they have these animals, they're so highly social, so intelligent, and unfortunately so habitual that it's basically, we have count the number of sows you have that many animals with OCD problems in your barn. And that's what you have to work with. And then you have to, I don't know what that says about us either.
That's why I was laughing going, okay, now you just said we have OCD as well, but
yeah. But that's what it boils down to. I mean, it sounds silly to maybe a lot of people, but if you pay attention to that, these animals, because they're not only intelligent and highly socially engaged within their circles, but they're unfortunately very habitual, which means that they hate having their day messed with. They hate having what they're used to.
Yeah.
Messed with.
You said unfortunately. That's another one where you correct me, I'll correct you. No, it's not unfortunate, because if you recognize that, you can actually take advantage, and that's not in a negative way. You can take advantage of that to go, if I now understand that they are very habitual, that they want to do the same thing with the same pigs at the same time of day, and you enable that, you've actually made a better situation for that animal. So that's not necessarily unfortunate once you understand it. It's unfortunate if you're trying to fight it. If you're trying to force them to use a system or a piece of equipment that is contrary to what they desire, then you, that's unfortunate. But if you have a system or a design where it works and you're enabling that, it's actually an advantage.
So I guess, yeah, that's my terminology was right and wrong. It's unfortunate because most people don't understand and don't work with that. We're going to toot our own horn here maybe, but it's fortunate that we are able to, for whatever reasons, we are able to see that, to work with it, to understand it. And if you build a structure for them in their whole daily lives, not just the pen around them, but how you function, how you set up that whole pen to function, how you set up the whole barn to flow, if you understand the nature of what they're looking for, you can give these animals the ideal environment, essentially. But it really actually has less to do with the quality of air and the quality of the food they're getting, but more to do, if I may, with the quality of social interaction that they can or cannot develop. Don't know if I said that right, just how I'm viewing it right now.
No, that's way back to it. That's a tying in where we all had our social networks disrupted. I think most people I've talked to have realized that a lot of the stuff they had been doing was pointless, and they've realized what is important. This is the same thing, breaking it down to what's important to the animal. They don't watch CNN. They don't really care what's going on.
Well, who watches CNN these days? Sorry, I couldn't resist that. I mean,
James Earl Jones. Come on, man. I just like even hearing the voice.
people in airports, and there's nobody in those these days. And maybe three people in Sioux Falls. I don't know. There's about that many that watch on.
They stay in business. I'm not going to argue that. And that's too big of a rabbit hole for us to go down. But,
I'm sorry. You started that.
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. But yes, I'm basically saying that they don't know what else is going on up there. And not in just in these times. That's in everyday normal a year ago and 5 years from now. They don't have a clue what's going on in our lives. They know what's going on in theirs. They know that they're hungry at certain times. They know they're tired at other times. They know they have to defecate and urinate at other times.
Okay, wait, are you still talking about people or pigs at this point?
Oh, people are actually not aware of all those things. I just listen to pigs are.
Yeah, I was like, I'm getting off track here. Yeah, that or you are.
But yeah, they just... They have a certain desire throughout the day, a different time to eat, sleep, hang out with that small group. And again, I'm still talking about pigs. But if you enable that, if you give them an environment wherein they can achieve that, then all those stresses are taken away. If you put them in a situation where they're having to fight for food, that's going to go bad real fast. You put them in a bad air environment. That obviously is also a stressor. All those things that we can remove for them or adapt for them that they actually have no concept of. I've never, other than been reading that book Animal Farm, I've never seen a pig actually stand up, pull up his pants, and say something. So no. It's not going to happen. They can't tell you what's wrong. It's like having a baby. You know something's wrong only when it gets so bad that they're screaming. Well, if those animals are screaming in the barn, it's too late already.
Right.
You want to keep them to the point where they're just happy.
Well, one of the things that it's, I mean, I've thought about this maybe too much or not, or maybe... Just the right amount.
The hours in the truck.
Yeah. but even just walking through the barn, no matter what you do, when you walk into, when you set up a barn, when you walk through these animals, when you introduce them to a new pen, everything about their lives, first and foremost is always food security. Ken and Chief in her mind is, well, I should back up a bit. It can be that she, as long as she is secure in where her food is coming from, she starts focusing on other stuff. But if she's not secure in her food supply, that will be the only thing she thinks about ever. So it's one of those, it's a black and white kind of thing. It's so paramount in her day that if it's not secure, it's all she thinks about. If her food supply is secure, she rarely thinks about it at all. And so if you don't actually set up a pen in such a way that she says, I don't worry about food. I know I'm going to get it. If I'm hungry, I'm going to get up and go eat, and I'm not going to have to fight for it. I'm not going to compete. I'm not going to have any stress around
I was just going to say, it's not just that she can get food. It's how she gets food.
Yeah,
food, but she has to fight for it. That's a very different attitude than I can go get food and I don't have to fight for it.
Sure. It's all about food security. It's not just does it exist or doesn't it. It's is it an experience that I'm willing to engage in? So it's not just about can I get food. It's do I want to get food? So it's both of those. If you can set up a social structure within this pen where this girl just says, yeah, I'm going to wander over and get food, and there's no concern. Like it's not a conscious thought. I'm speaking in a type of sense where it's a conscious thought, but it's not. If there's no stress around getting food, she doesn't say, huh, I wonder where the stress went. She doesn't say, wow, I'm surprised there's no stress today. It's either there or it isn't. And there's no conscious thought. So if she just is innately okay with saying, when I walk up there, there's no stress, and she doesn't wonder where the stress went or why there isn't stress, it's either there or it isn't. Once you remove all of those concerns, because you think about it, on the flip side, if there is stress with getting food, whether she has to compete for it or whether she says, when I go in.
That's the important part. What the change is
that she can no longer focus any part of herself on just existing now or existing within a group. Now she's worried about almost exclusively worried about, oh crap, I have to go eat and it's not going to be fun. And her whole day is stressing out about the point where she's going to go eat. And she's no longer willing or able to be part of any kind of group because
every interaction is an agitation.
Every interaction is overridden by this concern. So if you can remove it, it's not one of those where she says, well, surprise, surprise, today isn't stressful. I'm going to change who I am. It's either there or it isn't. Right. And so when it isn't there, all of a sudden she's like, I'm not even thinking about it. And I'm okay. I don't even worry about food. Therefore, I can, who do I want to be friends with? Who am I going to hang out with? Who am I interacting with throughout the day? And I don't view others as competition so much as just part of my world who I can interact with. Does that make sense?
Okay. It all makes sense to me as it should. So I'm going to do the super obvious CNN to Joe Biden lead-in question.
Oh, it's a softball, is it?
It's a softball. Here you go.
Wow.
How do we achieve that? How do we as New Standard achieve that? You've just described what needs to happen. You haven't told us how it happens. How do we do that?
Well,
we know what needs to happen. I bet nobody listening to this is going to argue with you. But now, how do we do it?
There's a couple of things you need to look at. Well, not a couple. I mean, there's about 100 small things, a few key things, all of it plays together. One of the things you have to understand going into a pen like that, and it's really interesting to watch anytime you bring in pigs in general into a new environment, you notice that they don't sit still. Pigs don't relax. They you put them in a new pen, they're always nosing around every single corner. They're exploring. And when you really think about it, when you really look at what they're doing, they're trying to figure out, where's my food? Where's my food security? Where am I eating? What do I do about food? So one of the first things you do always when you introduce a pig to a pen where you want them to get along well is you show them where the food is and you say, see, look. Now, in a sow pen, of course, any sow that's entering a pen has been typically introduced to the feeding station before. So it's key to just say, oh, hey, remember, this is where you eat. You answer that question for her. She doesn't need to, you know, monofocus on where's my food source. If you can answer that question, so then all of a sudden she can enter the pen and say, right, I've been here before, I've done this, I know how this works. Then you set up a pen in such a way that you separate her key areas throughout the day. So now an animal has, and we could be talking about almost humans here too, you have three key areas that you should sort of delineate, keep separate, not so much keep separate, but at least define these areas. You want the animals to know this is where you eat. This is the part of the area where you go to get food. There's other areas where you can go to interact with your pen mates, with the others in your environment. There's areas where you can go to rest and sleep without having anybody disturb you. And basically what's left over is the area that you'll do your dunging and your other business in, and your defecating in general. So if you can create a pen that flows in such a way that you can define and keep those areas at least not so much separate, but at least clearly defined, you can further fostering the proper approach to the pen. Now, the other thing, or another key thing you want to also keep in mind, girls who have eaten are looking for social interaction. They're talking again about pigs in a pen, or sows, if you will. You don't want a lot of interaction between girls who have a full stomach. Their hormonal balances change as their digestion sets in. You don't want them interacting with girls who are focused on food. So those who are perhaps waiting in line to eat don't mix well with those who have already eaten. They're just, they don't get along.
Picture the people waiting in the line outside the restaurant versus those ones walking out.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to keep it away from the humans. Come on.
No, but that's a very different mood. It's the same thing.
No. So it's a lot of these things that you want to do. Then the other thing to do, even with feeding these girls, again, we speak of them in terms of having conscious thought, just because it's an easier way to explain it. But by and large, everything they do is happening by pre-programmed DNA. They just do because they do. And it either works or it doesn't. So now what you want to really have happen is you want girls coming out of the feed stations, or you want girls, actually the sows, when we're feeding them in these pens, you want them to be feeling full before they're asked to leave the table, if you will. So you want them to have this full feeling. It's that we've talked about this, we've wrote blogs about this, this level of satiety, or this feeling of satiety, where digestion has to set in before she's asked to give up her space. There's a really key element, really, because it goes back to how fast you feed her and all that. You want her to just say, you know what, I'm full. I'm just going to leave anyway. Even if somebody else happens to interact with her space with the flow of the feeders and all that. So you want to program it in such a way. Now, satiety is kind of a nebulous term, to be honest. We talk about it from just our own studies and our own empirical evidence in the barns. We're going to say somewhere in the range of 13 to 16 minutes, it will set in for most sows. I don't know that anybody's done an official study to say if there's a general time frame. We've just seen that girls that are consuming their full portion and have to interact with others at the 11 or 12 minute mark from when they start eating just don't want anybody else in their space. However,
not yet.
Girls who are at 15 or 16 minutes from when they start eating, most times are like, eh, I'm done. I'm just going to, you do your thing. I'm leaving. There's a huge shift there. And it's important to hit that. Now, when...
Yeah, but even how they leave.
Well, then you get into that. Yes.
You had mentioned the front exit. Like, when I leave, speaking from a sales perspective, when I leave, I'm done. I'm feeling full. And I'm just wandering out at my own pace. Versus there are some options out there on the market where the sow has to back out. They say, oh, that's great. She knows how to do that. Of course she knows how to do that. She can learn all kinds of things. We said, okay. They're very intelligent animals.
Let's go back to it. We've been having a couple beers talking here because that was the whole point of this. I mean, I'm not going to beat that over the head, but that is breaking every fundamental rule. When you ask a girl to back out, you're breaking every fundamental rule about creating a safe space for her. And it's never going to work out that well. That's
why just from the absolute dumbest Joe Farmer redneck perspective that I could pull, asking a sow to back into a group that is trying to get into a space is a non-starter. Why would she leave? Why would she put her most vulnerable part into the most aggressive part of the most aggressive group? This is a 1 + 1 = 3. There's going to be problems.
We know they use deprivation of water to force these animals to leave. We're not going to, again, I'm not going to, beat that over the head. But that's how you get these animals to leave, is you just don't give them water while they're eating. They have to leave to go get something to drink. I prefer to focus. Perhaps, but let's focus more on the positive side of it. There is a better way. There is a way that you can do this different. You just design a system where you forward exit. You ask the animals. You can give her all the water you want. Digestibility, palatability, everything is better when you add water to her feed. And then when time comes and she has to leave, you just say, hey, you go forward, somebody's coming behind you, not a big deal. It all works well. And then you set up the pen in such a way that the girls who are exiting forward, they have a fairly long walk. This is actually key. It's not a detriment. It's actually a really good thing. They have a long walk to get back to the entrance because they shouldn't go back to the entrance right away. What you want is...
No reason to be there.
Yeah, it's like me when I go to mom and dad's for Thanksgiving. After 15, 20 minutes after leaving the dinner table, I'm trying to find a place to take a nap and everybody should leave me alone. That's what you actually want to foster in these animals. And it works if you set it up well. So I don't want to, go down the dark road of how you can do it wrong. There's great ways to do it right. Some people choose that way, some don't. But, I mean, there is reasons for why we do what we do. I firmly believe in that, that there is a way to treat these animals where you're taking a... you can abbreviate it. You're taking a highly OCD biological element and making her environment work so that she's very comfortable in it.
Yeah, you're enabling her natural tendencies and designing around that rather than designing something saying, now you go and train that animal to use this. It can work. It's just not necessarily the best result.
I really dislike having to train an animal to use something as any kind of term. It's more you enable her to use her environment well. Mm-hmm. Even in what we do.
You can train her to use a bad system. You can force them. Never mind the word train. You can force them to go, yeah, I know you're going to want to eat. And I've shown you where it is. It's a terrible thing to do, but you're going to do it because you'd rather do that terrible thing than starve.
Well, exactly. It's, we saw this even before I ever worked with...
So that can work, that could work, but it's not the best way to do it.
Yeah. But, well, you can force behavior. Before I ever started working, I was already in this industry, but before I ever started working with sows in group housing, I ran into a few barns that had stray voltage problems. And it's a great example is that there's barns where the pigs would literally.
You reference it, and you can actually measure that stray voltage with a regular meter. It's
a pig will feel half volt. I think if I remember my numbers right, and it would be a shock to them every time they would ground out a half volt of kind of stray voltage on the watering or the feeding. They would feel it and would not be comfortable to them. It's like us holding, so it would be equivalent to you holding an electric fence and say, eat this meal while you're holding, or drink this water or this beer while you're holding an electric fence.
They went to the feeder. As they eventually overrode that you'd rather take that pain than starve.
Yeah.
It's not productive.
So you can force animals to use a system they're not entirely comfortable with, and maybe that's extreme in terms of an example, but you could force animals to use a system they're not comfortable with. It doesn't mean that it's a great environment for them. It just means that you're able to force them to use it. That's
you're able to feed them,
pretty low bar to set.
But that's, I would have to agree.
I love working with animals. There's no question that if all jobs paid the same, I would be probably raising cattle someplace. It's just my nature because that's what I grew up with. But I love working with sows and pigs in general because of the level of intelligence that you get interact with. It's definitely different than a beef cow. And it's just fun to be able to.
Or just for my pet peeve, the turkey.
Yes, I know. You've never liked turkeys, but.
I don't. Not even deep fried.
Well, okay. Too many rabbit trails. We're not going to go down it. But. for me, it's just so much fun because you can actually make this work. She's not a machine. She's not a robot. She's not a mechanical component where when you put some factor in, you get a defined factor out. You have to
it's a live thing.
You have to work with this animal. So what it boils down to is we will, design barns around the animal. And the equipment has to fit within that design. I see a lot of where guys are designing barns around the equipment and the animals ask to fit within the design based on the equipment.
And they'll do it, as you said, but it's not productive.
But again, this isn't a bad discussion. This isn't something that I want to just, browbeat everybody and say you're doing it wrong or other guys are doing it wrong. That's not at all the issue. What I love to see is the fact that there is definitely a great, positive, proper way to do it, and it can be done. We offer at New Standard in general, we offer a way that says this animal can have her needs met and she can be happy and she can be productive, and you don't have to compromise what you do with your barn. It's just a slight shift where we're going to focus on the animal instead of the equipment.
Yeah, shift in mentality, not only from our side, but also from the barn users or the workers. They have to understand as well that the equipment's in place. It's enabling all these things, but I've certainly seen that in anybody we've taken to any of our systems. It differs very much from typically what they'd be used to in a stall barn or wherever, where these natural tendencies of the animal were never identified simply because they were not enabled. They were,
I was talking about,
for lack of a better word, cooped up, trapped up, whatever, that you could put feet in harbor, that the food security was there. But there's all these other things. I had how many people tell me over the years, pens don't work with sows. Not a poor pen. They don't work, of course. You tried something. You tried the right thing the wrong way. And of course, it was a disaster.
I was talking to
done the right way.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, done the right way, and especially when you have people as well, because it's not just the equipment, it's not just the sales, there's also people interacting with them. When those people get their heads wrapped around them how that can work, and they, the ones who, because we can supply and suggest and train all we want, but at the end of the day, we're not the ones in the barn actually dealing with them 24/7. When they get their minds wrapped around the fact that these animals think in a different way, it's literally magical how the whole thing shifts. And oh, look, everybody's calm, the pigs and the people. Yeah. Everybody's just working together.
I was speaking with the guys at Honeygrove about this a few weeks back, and they've had some experience in the past with a stall barn, and some of the guys had been away from pigs for a few years, and they came back now with this group housing barn, and it took some conversation, and they started to realize, they said, back when we were working with the pigs and the sows in stalls, it was essentially you were in there's a couple different ways that I want to present this to the way that the interaction was almost as a jailer and a prisoner in a yep. bad sense, but it was in a sense with the stalls and the people looking after them, is basically this machine inside this crate that you gave her a certain amount of food, you get and water, and you got a certain amount of pigs out at the end. And it was just an equation of water and food in and semen, and this machine would give you pigs out at the end. And it was, I use the jailer type terminology only because
the word's in the control.
That's how the sow even viewed the people in the barn. If you mm-hmm. really look at it at these stall barns, the sows didn't view you as part of their environment. You were the overlord, the warden. Yeah. And what's really shifted for these guys, and what really became clear, is that we're now actually their caregiver, and it's not just
total different that, mentality.
Not yeah. just that the people have changed, it's the sows and how they interact with the people. They view the people not as a warden, but as a caregiver. Mm-hmm. And so even the sows interact, because everybody who's ever been in the sow barn has walked into a farrowing room where the first sow sees you and she gives that bark where she alerts everybody else, and everybody else rattles their cages as they shuffle around and jump up and everything. I always call it that bark and rattle, but everybody's seen that in a farrowing room. It happens, except in a barn that has really well-functioning gestation group pens. Because when that shift is made, when the sows view their caregivers as caregivers instead of wardens, they do not startle in the farrowing rooms anymore. And it's the yep. coolest thing to see, because I've been in both circumstances.
I've seen the same. They don't do that jump and rattle. You call it bark and rattle. I call it the jump. But yeah, they now go, "Hey, he's here."
I've seen one eye open. I've seen these cells laying down, and they're just laying down, and then one eye opens like, "Oh, okay." Yeah. And then their eye drifts back shut.
The biggest change is, and take it to another level. When you and I go into a barn, everyone's got to understand, we're not in these barns every day. We might be in a barn on multiple days, but the same barn, same animals, we're not. So I wouldn't be, I've seen stall barns where the manager, the guy who's always there, walks in and they don't move. But when I do, as the guy coming in to do a service or an overlook or whatever, then they jump. This is a stranger. This is a different smell. They have an incredible sense of smell, and they know it's somebody different. And then they move. Well, we can go. I go into barns, and I haven't seen these pigs in 2 years. None of them know me, and they don't react. And that's to me the real big difference, is that's now it's even a complete stranger. Never mind the guy they're used to.
It's a beautiful thing.
They know who's different. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's wonderful to see. So. On the note, I think that
we need to wrap it up, don't we?
We should.
You probably
end it on a positive. So,
No. Yeah.
I hope everybody's enjoyed this. I know I have a few beer in and it's been all good. And I hope that we can actually get together at some point physically.
Well,
in the near future, but we shall see how things go.
Yeah, one would hope anyway. Alrighty, take care. We'll drink beer together in person at some point. See ya.
Sounds good. Thanks for listening. Yep.